Now, we do, of course, live in a digital world, and a big part of this is interacting in online spaces. Every time we Google something or use a log on social media, algorithms are fast at work recording and responding to what we do to make our online experience more convenient or terrifying, depending on how much you like thinking about cat food in the morning and seeing an ad for cat food in the afternoon. Of course, our online habits and digital footprints are turned into data, but there are so much information out there. What happens to it all? To talk to us a little bit more, we are joined now by Professor Kate Smith-Miles. She's from the University of Melbourne. Kate, thanks so much for chatting to us this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So, a bit of background, what is it exactly that allows algorithms to learn from what we do online?
Well, when we participate in online activities, browsing websites and things, all sorts of information is being recorded, and companies like to use that information to try to figure out our preferences and try to push information at us that we might be interested in. And so they have algorithms that troll through that data, that condense it all, and that make predictions about things in the hope that we might, you know, increase company sales and various things. But of course, there's lots of privacy issues. Companies would like to have access to much more information, so they have to employ some clever tricks to get us to divulge information that tells them more about what we might like.
Now, the word tricks is interesting there. What sort of tricks do these companies use?
Oh, I think, you know, we've seen an example recently. I think it was going pretty crazy on Facebook, where people would take a photo of themselves and plug it into an app and answer some questions, and it would say how old it thinks you are, and it would sort of forward and backwards age estimate you, so you can see what you look like when you're going to be 80, things like that. Everyone thinks it's a lot of fun, but of course they're just handed over really valuable information. They've given their face, they've told the algorithm all sorts of stuff about their age and their name, and, you know, it's got location services turned on, they know where they live. All sorts of information has been willingly handed over so that you can have fun with this app. And of course that is just going into a massive database of a collection of information that companies can use to refine how they how well the algorithms perform in not just, you know, guessing how old you are, but all sorts of things. It could be racial profiling, could be all sorts of stuff. So we do need to be a little bit cautious about handing over our data just to have a bit of fun.
I know one of the arguments that does float around is that if we're using these platforms freely, you know, where you have nothing to hide, nothing to worry about, I guess, why is it that we should be so concerned about what big corporations are doing with our data?
Oh, I think it's all right if it's, you know, innocuous stuff like just telling you which book you might be interested in and things. But, you know, sometimes, you know, when you've got these large collections of information, people's motivations in developing algorithms can be a little dangerous. So let's take face recognition, for instance. You think it's handy to be able to identify who somebody is, but there can be bias that's introduced into these algorithms depending on the data that they're trained on. So we've had some cases recently where people have been arrested falsely. Like there was a young African-American man in New York who got arrested browsing through an Apple store. Because some face recognition algorithm that the Apple Store was using recognized his face, or thought it recognized his face on a camera, as somebody who'd previously stolen from the store. So they called the police. And the whole US Congress got so interested in this this debate recently about racial bias in algorithms that they had an inquiry into it. And the conclusion was it's pretty much white men developing algorithms that work particularly well for white men, but the databases are not diverse enough to be truly accurate across the whole population. So, you know, when these databases are being built and the algorithms are being trained on them, we do need to make sure that we have true diversity and that there's no bias in the data that the algorithm learns from.
And that's a scary thought too, because we do like to think of computers, I suppose, as this completely objective force that has no bias inherent in it whatsoever.
Yeah, well, I mean, algorithms are just computer programs that are making decisions based on rules that either we humans have given them, or we humans have given them data for them to figure out the rules by themselves in an artificial intelligence way. Either way, we humans are responsible for how algorithms perform, and we have our biases. And if we choose not to give it truly representative data because we don't think it matters much or whatever, then the algorithm will be biased.
So moving forward, are there any ways we can, I guess, limit how our actions are being tracked by some of these algorithms?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, location services are not necessarily, you shouldn't turn them on all the time. If you're using a map, then great. The algorithm needs to know where you are, but you don't need to tell every algorithm exactly where you are just because it asks you where you are. Yeah, I think we should just be a little bit cautious about unnecessarily handing over too much information.
Kate, we really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much.
No worries. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That was Kate Smith-Miles. She's a professor of applied mathematics in the School of Mathematics and Statistics at the University of Melbourne, chatting with us about some of the ethical considerations regarding online algorithms.